Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Our faces are intimately connected to our identities. They showcase our emotions and help us present ourselves to the world. So if you think about your face being destroyed, you can imagine how your life could fall into darkness. That's what motivated Dr. Bodin Pomahawk to lead a campaign to do face transplants at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital. WBUR's Lynn Joliker profiles the doctor in the latest installment of our ongoing series, Visionaries.
And give me a big smile now. Yeah, the left side is starting to pull.
I can feel it different here when I smile. Yeah.
The simple act of smiling. It's not so simple for Carmen Tarleton, but her plastic surgeon, Dr. Bodin Pomahawk, is happy to see it's getting easier. Tarleton's face is not the one she was born with.
And how is breathing through your nose?
I'm wondering if it's making me more tired, because sometimes I have to open my mouth to breathe.
In February, Pomahawk transplanted this face from a deceased donor in her 50s onto Tarleton, a 44-year-old former registered nurse and mother of two. That was 6 years after Tarleton's estranged husband beat her with a baseball bat and doused her with industrial-strength lye, dramatically disfiguring her and burning 80% of her body. It was the fifth face transplant Pomahawk performed at Brigham and Women's Hospital since 2009.
We take it for granted that you, in the morning, look briefly at your face and fix your hair or whatever, but you interact the entire day with other people and you're used to just normal reactions. These patients are used to these horrified looks and isolation. They can't eat outside, they drool, they can't smell. You kind of realize that the life without face is essentially social death.
At 42 years old, Pomahawk sports a graying goatee and glasses and reveals a gentle, modest demeanor. But his unassuming presence belies a fierce determination and focus. In 1996, one day after graduating from medical school in his native Czech Republic, he packed up and flew to Boston, where he had previously spent a brief time during a medical exchange, but knew no one and had no work or schooling lined up.
One day, he just showed up without an appointment, and he offered to work for no pay, and I told him that was a bad idea.
So impressed by that move, Dr. Elof Erickson, the chief of plastic surgery at the Brigham, hired Pomahawk to work in his lab for a small salary. Pomahawk attributes his ambition to growing up in communist Czechoslovakia, where his father, a chemical engineer, was persecuted for signing a declaration against the Communist Party and therefore could only find odd jobs outside his profession.
So he kept emphasizing to us, his sons, that we should learn language, that we should think beyond the Iron Curtain. So I was primed to just go out and explore.
And he got his chance. Just as he was starting medical school in 1989, the nonviolent Velvet Revolution took place. He helped organize student demonstrations. The communist leaders resigned, meaning the system that had been limiting him his whole life was gone.
You have to prove yourself in the kind of the big world, and it puts a lot of pressure on anybody. I always had the feeling I have to work extra hard. I cannot be just as good as anyone in Western Europe or the U.S., but you have to be better.
He says his drive showed itself early in life. He knew late in elementary school that he wanted to be a surgeon, to use his hands and his brain to help people. Once he got into the surgical residency program at the Brigham, he knew plastic surgery was his calling because, he says, he could really be creative and innovative. And he quickly zeroed in on the face.
I think it's the most fascinating part of the human body that one can work on. And it's so intricate and so specialized, so unique. It's so hard to get it right, to do the reconstruction well. So I was all fired up about that.
Pomahawk tried many operations to improve different parts of Carmen Tarleton's face in the years after she was attacked.
The ideas he had about certain surgeries to try and help me were creative, and even though they didn't all work, it was always worth the risk.
But the more times it didn't work with his burn and trauma patients, the more frustrated Pomahawk became.
Patients were often still looking very deformed, and many times the goals shifted from reconstruction to more wound control. My wife is a physician as well, so sometimes I was very happy about the result. I showed her the picture and she was like, is this really it? Is that all you can do?
Ultimately, it wasn't all he could do. The world's first face transplant, a partial one, happened in France in 2005. And Pomahawk, still a junior doctor virtually unknown in local medical circles, wanted to do the same thing here. His mentor, Dr. Erickson, was one of his earliest champions. But there were others who needed convincing.
There were not only skeptics, there were naysayers. We talked frequently about this, and I was trying to do my best to cheer him on and support him.
Through a long, painstaking process, Pomahawk addressed the ethical questions raised by the hospital's administrators and review board. How would patients be psychologically impacted by having someone else's face? Would a transplanted face transport some of the donor's identity along with it?
People were concerned that we may be creating essentially dead people walking again.
Pomahawk and his colleagues worked up computer simulations to dispel that worry. But there were more. Since a new face isn't needed in order to survive, would it be right to subject a patient to risky, lifelong immune suppression medications? And the deceased donor's face would need blood flow up until the last minute, so it would have to be recovered before the heart and other vital organs. Pomahawk pledged he would step aside if there were complications so surgeons could retrieve the life-sustaining organs for other patients. He and his colleagues were virtually designing the face transplant operation from scratch, he says, something surgeons don't often get to do.
How do you recover the face? What do you include? Just taking a piece of tissue doesn't mean that you can just put it on and it would live. You have to think through individual steps. So that process was probably most challenging, but also most fun to work on.
In 2009, all the work paid off. Pomahawk led a team of surgeons on a partial face transplant for a man who had fallen on the electrified third rail in a T station. They followed 2 years later with the country's first full face transplant, and they've done three since, making the Brigham the leading face transplant center in the U.S.
We'll figure out whether there's anything to do with the eyelids, but if there's not much, we'll start insetting, you know, mental nerves, oral mucosa.
The video from Carmen Tarleton's 16-hour face transplant shows Dr. Pomahawk's calm, deliberate, and humble manner. Though he is in charge of the surgery, he frequently takes a step back for a colleague to lead a portion of it. He works with a team of extremely skilled surgeons, he points out. They delicately connect dozens of arteries, veins, nerves, soft tissue, and muscles.
Now we'll probably carve out from the nose the septum.
His life outside the operating room is quite the team effort as well, and he acknowledges it's a tough balance. He has two kids in grade school. His wife gave up her medical career to manage things at home. He spends about 80% of his work time in the operating room or in clinic visiting patients. The other 60% is spent on research. You'll notice, he jokes, that that adds up to 140%. Among his many research projects, he's working on ways to help the body build permanent tolerance for transplanted tissues, ultimately eliminating the need for lifelong immune suppression drugs.
Then I see that not only face, but variety of sort of a body restoring operations will be feasible, and that's really what will scale it up from few individuals with the most tragic injuries to technology that can help thousands of, perhaps hundreds of thousands of patients.
Soon, Brigham surgeons will start doing leg transplants. Dr. Pomahawk will play a role, but his focus will remain on the face. Several more candidates are waiting for donors, and he's closely monitoring the progress of the five who've already received new faces.
But you feel well?
I do. I feel better and better.
Good.
Yeah. And I'm learning to play banjo. So one of these days,
wow,
I'll play you a banjo song.
Pomahawk calls them his patients for life.
Well, they all have my cell phone. They all have direct access to me at any time. I'm almost like their personal doctor. Whatever problem they have, they can, and they do go directly to me.
He says he feels responsible for their success and any setbacks. And though their new faces didn't save their lives, he's thrilled they have gotten their lives back. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Lynn Joliker.
Brigham and Women's Hospital covered the cost of the first face transplant. The surgeons donated their time. Since then, a Department of Defense research grant has paid for the operations. But Dr. Pomahawk hopes in the future the procedure will be covered by insurance.